beautiful, lovely white hair. It had a shining quality. You could see it from a long way off.
And she was white very young.
Was she? Well, I didn't know that, of course.
Well, she always said that she dyed her hair during the suffragette campaign, getting out of prison and hiding, because she was, you know, one of the cat and mouses.
Yeah.
And this had had an effect on her hair. I rather suspect she also suggested forcible feeding and had a bit of an effect on her hair, as it certainly had on her throat. And she did go white very young, but really before she was 40, she was white.
She had very beautiful hair, and you could see it from a long way off, and that was very useful, that big meetings.
Yes, you could identify her. Yes. Well, she looks very striking, really rather beautiful, actually, as well. I mean, not just her hair.
She wasn't beautiful as a young woman, oddly enough. I've seen pictures of her as a young woman, and she was really very sort of brown and mousy and ordinary, and but she was certainly very striking and handsome.
Oh, very distinguished.
Very distinguished. Yes, you singled her out. You know, she was.
Oh, you said
very striking.
Yeah.
She. I mean, perhaps I ought to just.
And I came upon her not because of WSBU, though I had been a member of WSBU.
Had you really?
Oh yes.
Well, wow.
I joined that when I was quite young. But they had a rule that you mustn't be allowed to do the things that would get you into prison until you were 21, and I was 21 when the war started, so I never did anything except give out leaflets and be enormously excited by being allowed to shake hands with Emmeline Pankhurst.
You actually should shake hands with her.
Oh, well, yes. But that was only at meetings after it was over.
Yes.
But I knew Emmeline Pettit Lawrence, of course, through Dorothy.
Really?
Fairly well towards the end of the night.
Did you really?
Yes.
Michael, as you know everybody I want to talk about.
I knew the Pettit Lawrences. I was terribly young, of course, but I used to go and visit them at Peas Lake.
Did you really?
And so I feel I ought to claim that I knew them, although not as an adult, really, although I met her, but I do
tell me what she was like as she appeared to a child. Presumably you met her when she was quite old, did you?
Oh yes, she would be.
Well, yes, she was. I can remember going to Peace Lake and visiting her and feeling, you know, it was very easy, and you know, I wasn't a terribly easy child by any means, and but I can remember enjoying it, and really I don't think I can say any more than that. It was a tremendous warmth. I think she must have been a lovely person.
Oh, yes.
But I don't know anything about her.
Yes. Your mother...
She was very deaf, Emmeline Pettit Lawrence. She was very deaf. And she didn't have these wonderful things that you now pin onto your bosom. She had a box like a brownie camera. And she didn't mind about it at all. She would tap it and say, "This is my ear, dear. Please speak into this." And you were immediately unable to speak at all.
I couldn't say anything.
And she soon made it all right. She was a lovely person.
But your mother knew her, presumably, well, obviously.
Very well.
Because they were both in the same organisation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, because my father was active in Labour politics, and my mother also. In fact, they jointly wrote a book on land nationalisation. That comes after. That's an important bit. We knew the Pettit Lawrences in the Labour movement. I mean, my parents did. So
it was
a socialist
connection. Yeah.
Connection, as well as an old... feminist one.
Yes, could you tell me what happened to your mother sort of after she was organised with Birmingham? I don't really have any knowledge of her since then.
You know much more than I do about her. I explain my history, which is the only way I can do it, I think. She was a socialist. She went to Fabian meetings, and she met my father, who was a very poor, a self-educated son of a Jewish girl who'd escaped from Berlin and come to London, and was pregnant with him, had this baby, but married a man called Davis, and he, my father was therefore called Albert Emil because of the German connection, Davis, although the Davis man wasn't his father. And he was lumbered with this large family of Davises, he being the eldest. Davis, having conceived about five children, then vanished. And my father, being the eldest in the family, had to support his mother, and they did moonlight flits all around the East End. And he managed to educate himself by dint of getting work as a boot boy or something in a, I mean, it's really like Dickens, in a family that had a library, and the family recognized that this boy had something in him and gave him free run of the library. And he became something in the city eventually, and very active in Labour politics and on the LCC, and finally chairman of things in the LCC, and treasurer of the Fabian Society. Now this is where the Fabians come in. And he mixed with, you know, all the great names in the Fabian Society in those days. And my mother met him through the Fabians, and there's a lovely story that he first noticed her because at a Fabian summer school there was a competition, you know, they passed the wet afternoon, I suppose, with an intellectual competition, to think of the most, the book title likely to lead to the lowest sales. And my mother said, "How to Ride a Tricycle." And my father was rather intrigued with this and proceeded to fall in love with her. And she being a bit, he was married, of course, to somebody who had taught in the Sunday school. So he had, I mean, very early in his life, he'd married someone who hadn't kept pace with his intellectual growth and wasn't interested in politics or anything. And so he fell in love with my mother, and she with him. And she, being the sort of woman she was, determined to have a child. And the first conception she lost because she was making some pacifist speech, and aborted. And determined woman she was, she then finally conceived me, and I was duly born in 1921.
Wonderful story, yes.
Yes, quite a story.
Yes, yes. You're extraordinary forthright. I mean, I did actually know a bit about this, but not all the details.
I'm very proud of it. I have never been anything but.
Yeah, like
in fact, I must tell you a funny story. I hope we're not wasting your tape, but just to indicate how I feel about it, John Parker, who is still alive actually, a Labour MP, he got all very active over illegitimate children and birth certificates. And I was rung up by the BBC, this is many, many years ago, would I take part in a broadcast connection with John Parker's bill on the abbreviated birth certificate. And I said, yes, right, I will. And I was duly summoned to meet the producer. And they said, well, we want you to tell us what, you know, awkward situations, embarrassments you've met as an illegitimate. And I said, well, I never have. I've never had a single one. But I really could not think of anything.
No.
So I said, sorry.
Your mother's a bit like that. I remember call myself. But you were then brought up by your mother by herself, were you?
Well, by her, but my father would come for weekends and we would have holidays together. And it really was a marvellous relationship, because they were always lovers, as it were, without the frightful, boring business of having to live together day in, day out. It was a very good relationship. Mm. And I don't remember... we had housekeepers at home who were the sort of backbone of the household, because my mother was working. And I do marginally remember being aggrieved if she wasn't home in the evening, you know, a good deal, but that's really all.
You say,
oh, that's different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You say she was working. How did she earn her living then at that time?
She was, good heavens. She
well, when I knew her little,
in the
she was with your father in his firm.
He was, yes, that's right. She
when
was,
I first knew her.
But she was doing something quite, do you know, I never knew what she was doing. But I know she used to get presents poured in upon her Christmas time, which she refused, except for one enormous box which she got regularly of Turkish cigarettes with silk, coloured silk tips, the most luxurious thing you ever saw. Mm. And this she felt was so particularly meant for her, because she only smoked Turkish cigarettes, that she accepted it. And I can remember being allowed as a small child to choose which colour tip it should be when she wanted
but she was in some sort of commercial
employment. Yes, she was.
Yes.
She was either organizing the office, and he ran a stock a cooperative. It was like a trust, investment trust. It was called the Cooperative Investment Trust, and it was the first sort of small man's investment trust. And there were several companies. Silkin was one of the directors, and it was really a forerunner of these trusts that are now quite commonplace, but
yes.
It was a new idea when
like
my father started.
Yes,
yes, that's
sure.
What I'm
trying
to
say. Yes, I see. Yes. So she, in a sense, he didn't sort of subsidise her. I mean, they were both members of the same
Well,
firm.
I don't think she would have been in that firm if he hadn't given her the job, but she was certainly worth employing. I mean, she was no passenger by any means.
What do you mean when you say that? I mean, she was very good at business, wasn't she?
She was extremely good at everything, I think. And if she applied her mind to something, she was extremely good at organising, at planning. But she certainly wasn't interested in the commercial world, because that was when she left and established Women for Westminster, which was paying her a salary, and she felt she could leave. You know, she didn't really want to stay on in the city, because it wasn't interesting.
Well, she had a first class brain.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
absolutely,
she?
First class.
Yeah.
And she had an ability to cut through to the core of something in a minute or two. The frills, all the flummeries were pushed aside, and there you were right at the core. She really had a very brilliant mind.
So she was good at drafting things, wasn't she?
Yes.
And meetings and that sort of
thing. Oh, yes.
But how would you compare her with Mrs. Billington Greig then? I mean, much more tactful, of course, than Mrs. Billington Greig.
Oh, much more, yes.
Less sort of pushing something.
Well, my knowledge of Dorothy when she was really working, after she'd founded the movement that came to be called Women for Westminster, was that she had an extraordinary ability to get the best out of voluntary workers.
Yes.
Whereas all that BG ever did was to antagonise them.
Did
she? Oh yeah, absolutely. Because Of course she had a good brain too, but she was a very domineering personality, and what she wanted, her way, that could be the only way. And obviously it wasn't like that at all. There could be another way.
She sort of knew how people ticked and manoeuvred things around. Yes, that's very interesting. But was she good with paperwork and that sort of thing?
Who, Dorothy?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, perhaps you don't know about this book. She spent 6 months in the House of Commons Library going through every single act of Parliament and changing the word to person instead of man or woman. In order, it was called the Equal Citizenship Blanket Bill.
That's just to alter the phrasing of
everything. Yes, but she did enormous research work on it. And we, all of us, went to her for anything. You'll see that she's written inside that to me, shoulder to shoulder.
Shoulder, yes, yes. That's really well worth having this.
Yes, well, of course, it's rather one of my precious possessions.
So, I'm afraid I'm very bad on the chronology of events after 1914. When was Women for When Westminster founded?
Oh, not till that much later, after, wait a minute. Dorothy died in 1944, so it must have been just before the Second World War.
Yes,
sort of
38.
Yes, that was really, that's when I got that up to then.
Were you in on the origins of it, actually?
Of Women for Westminster?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I was.
Were you?
Yes.
Was it her idea, actually?
Yes, it was her idea, and she was very strongly supported by Mrs. Rebecca Seep, who was a Miss Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, yes.
Rebecca Seep was a very wealthy woman, and she ran a newspaper called, I've got it here, Women's International News, was it?
Yes, I remember that.
Yes,
I think it grew out of the Women's International Movement then?
Yes, and she mentioned her idea to Mrs. Seif, who was a very keen feminist, and instantly took it up.
It's one thing I've noticed, that Jews are quite active in the women's movement altogether. In England, and there are quite a lot of them in the WSPU, and quite a lot later.
I wouldn't have thought it was a Jewish woman's place.
No, I wouldn't have said that. On the contrary, I would have thought. I think Jewish people are immensely active in local politics all over the country.
Yes.
But I wouldn't have said they were active in the feminist movement. But I mean, this must be something that's emerged from your head.
Yes, I mean, I can't say that I've done it systematically, but and I don't know that there are a larger proportion of Jews than there were Anglicans or Catholics, but there certainly are quite a lot of Jews active in the movement. Obviously the Galanx, the whole Galanx sort of complex, and Hertha Ayrton is another one. You know, I come across them here and there, and I think it's partly that minorities are attracted to each other, and that if you're against the system at all for any reason, you tend to join up with other people who are against the system.
Yes, that's right.
You know, but I don't know.
But that's the paper, you see, that...
International Women's News.
That's right, that Mrs. Rebecca C. ran. I don't know what else she did in that office in Dartmouth Street, but that was one of the products of it.
Oh, Marvis, you've written a memoir of her. I'd love to read this.
Yeah, well, you can have it. Go on.
Well, I really would very much like to read it.
Yes, of course.
So it really was largely her idea then, Women for Westminster. The idea was simply to get women in Parliament, was it?
To get them educated party. And also, of course, to press for the adoption of women candidates, which has always been something that we...
And it's fantastic. The women who are now in Parliament who went through Women for Westminster, it's quite remarkable. Now, help me, because I need to think who they are.
Well, Barbara Bett, now Barbara Castle.
Oh, yes, she came through that, did she?
Well, I don't know. She was one of the younger people in the Labour movement. I can remember very well thinking she'd go far.
But Irene White is one who was definitely pulled in.
Yes.
And one of the things that Women for Westminster did was a training. I mean, it was quite a serious sort of training programme in committee procedure, chairmanship.
Yes, public speaking of all kinds.
Yes.
We had classes.
How did it work then? Did you have branches all over the country or something then? I mean, or what?
I don't think so. I think it operated almost entirely from London. From Mrs. Seif's office in Dartford Street, which is near to Central Hall, Westminster.
And people just went along, women who were considering a political career, went along there to sort of learn how to do it.
I think things were sent out too. I went there. I did a lot of filling of envelopes there. So I think things must have been sent out. Honestly, I really don't remember clearly enough, though I have a distinct smell and vision of that office and the peculiar people flocked round my mother. She absolutely acted like a magnet for everybody who had some handicap or other, mental, physical, everything. And
she
was simply fantastic. Yes.
She had this
extraordinary... How did she do that? How did she attract these people?
She had tremendous warmth and sympathy and... they came because they liked being with her and talking to her, and she somehow managed to squeeze out of rushing around and doing 100 things at once time to communicate on quite a warm and deep level with these people, and they really felt, you know, a little bit of my mother last in them. She really was a most extraordinarily outward-going person.
And she could establish an individual relationship then with them and talk to them about their problems and things.
Well, I don't think she talked to them. I don't think they had time to think about their problems. They were too busy doing what she told them. But they just liked being near her. She had this tremendous personality of sympathy and drive somehow.
I think she made them feel... Many of these people who come offering to do voluntary work are rather shy and perhaps on the lunatic fringe as well. And she made them feel that she relied upon them. She gave them a sense of, I've got this job to do, even if it was only releasing envelopes, it was important. And they wanted to please her.
Gorgeous.
There are little Greek olives. They really love it.
You must turn me up when you're got an engagement
or
dinner or
whatever
it is.
I've got massive time now.
So she has this ability to somehow mobilise people without being domineering. That's rather unusual.
Fantastic. I mean, she had the most irritating people working for her regularly. They used to drive her dotted.
Yes.
She said, no, their moms are very good at sticking down envelopes or whatever it was she wanted them for. And she put up with them, and what's more, they loved her. They all adored her.
Where did these women come from? I mean, they were from middle-class women without jobs.
I think you'd say they were middle-class, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But they were pale grey things, weren't they? Mm. I mean, I don't even remember them.
But you
remember one or two of them.
Do you?
Mm.
But you wouldn't think this type of woman would want to go to Westminster, if you see what I mean.
They didn't themselves. They just thought it was, we ought to have more women in Parliament, you know. Other women, not them, but...
I see, yes.
They felt in tune with the theory of the thing, although they themselves didn't want to go. No, the ones who wanted to get there were really quite capable of getting there anyway, but just wanted that little boost of morale to fight the men, really.
Yes.
And a bit of solidarity, because in my time, especially in Hampstead, women didn't really have to fight. I mean, we were equals, but a little bit ahead of that, I mean, you know, a little bit older than me, it was a terrific struggle. And if you did want to have an influence in society and in politics, then you felt the need for somebody behind you. And I think that's exactly what Women for Westminster did. And it was a catalyst. It didn't really need to be there, but in fact it acted as a stimulant to a whole lot of quite vital women who, without it, might not have gone into politics.
Yes, that's very helpful. I must read, there's a book called Women in Westminster, isn't there, which I must read, Jean Manor, I think.
Oh, yes, there
I
is
must
a book,
read that.
Yes.
Anyway.
But it,
Could I push you back a little and ask you about what Dorothy was like as a mother? I mean, can you remember her as a mother and your relationship?
No, I certainly can.
from childhood onwards, you know.
I can remember wanting to get into her bed and having tremendous fun and, you know, all the sort of warmth that a child ought to have from its mother. I can remember being taught to swim. She was a trained physical education teacher, you know, she went to college and Dartford, I think. Anyway, she was very good at, you know, that sort of things, making sure that one got that sort of confidence. She was a very irritating gardener. we had this big garden on a slope in Kent with beautiful old Bramley apple trees. And because she worked all the week in the city, the weekends were very precious to her as a gardener. And she grew a terrific lot of vegetables and things. And my job, when I was old enough, was to cut the lawns. That reminds me of something else. And she would dive out into the garden from, you know, evenings and weekends, and we used to have visitors such as Charlie Marsh and Jimmy. I knew you would have. And what was Jimmy's surname?
Tread. Sorry.
Whereby hangs another tale. I have to cross all my fingers.
I'm writing these down just to remind me, to remind you.
They would be invited to come for the weekend and have to, if they wanted to talk to my mother, she'd say, well, I'm planting potatoes or pruning the apple trees or something, and they would simply have to follow her about wherever she went. And the most adorable thing about her was she was a tremendous sun worshipper, as indeed am I. And there used to be great goings on with sunbathing whenever the sun shone, and it seemed to more than it does now.
Yeah, I can remember being
absolutely mulberry colour all over because I would not bother to wear anything. And she would garden in a swimsuit, which was pretty far out in those days, and we were awfully open airy, weren't we?
Oh yeah.
Was that linked to a whole set of attitudes to health? I mean, did she believe?
Oh yes, but this was all part of her initial training. I mean, she had trained as a dietitian and a hygienist. I don't know what they call it, but I mean, this was all part of her training as a physical education, wasn't even called that then, I can't think what on earth it was called, instructor. Anyway, she was supposed to go and teach, that's how she got to Birmingham, by the way. Did you know that story?
No, tell me more.
When she had got her diploma, or whatever it was, from Dartford College, she was already on the fringe of the suffragette movement. She was, I suppose, about 19. And she applied for a job at a school to teach a girls' school to teach games and PE in Birmingham, and the headmistress wrote back and said would she send her hour and date of birth, as she wished to draw a horoscope. And my mother thought, well, really, all right, and proceeded to post off her hour and date of birth. And this woman drew the horoscope and appointed my mother. And my mother lasted there precisely 6 weeks, because she was then translated. I suppose somebody had gone into prison, and she was then made the organizer of the...
That was her route into the movement.
Birmingham,
yeah.
Yes. That was how she came to join the Birmingham group, because she was born and bred in London.
Yes, you mentioned art, but was that where her parents lived, or where she lived, or what?
No, her parents... I'm sorry. it's only that I must draw you a little picture of her parents, because they're fascinating.
That's what I'm here for.
lived in South Norwood, and that's my grandfather, whose name is Evans, was what I call myself London Welsh. I don't think he had any real genuine Welsh connections, and he was a rather successful builder, and he had this beautiful large house in South Norwood, with, you know, steps up to the front door and pillars, and all through drawing room. This was really rather super, lined with panels of green damask. Can you visualize this, all framed? I mean, really rather elegantly done for a builder in South Norwood. And you look through from the road to the garden, and this was quite a large room, a sitting room. And he had a series of maids, and they were all called Jessie, because the first one had been called Jessie, and he couldn't be bothered to learn. He really was the most dreadful man.
It was quite common. It was terrible the way we treated people who we thought were our inferiors.
Mm.
Their names
didn't matter. No, they were all called Jessie. And he had terribly disapproved of Dorothy becoming a suffragette, and had in fact forbidden her name to be mentioned in the household, you know. And when he died, she discovered he'd got a complete collection of all the press cuttings about her appearances in court, flashing with diamonds. I remember that being one of the things in the press cuttings she particularly liked. Defending herself on a charge, you know, something terrible. And so in fact he had secretly rather admired her, although he had prohibited her from the house. And it was only when I was about 10 that we were allowed to visit. So it was quite a long gap. Now, her mother had been, was much more progressive and intelligent than her father, had been a founder pupil at the North London Collegiate School.
Oh, had she?
She was called Marion Smith, and is in the Roll of Honour on the school, which of course was here in Canton Town, not where it is now. And she had been sneaking off, unbeknownst to her husband, to help in the suffragette cause. I mean, she was drawn by Dorothy into it in a very genteel way, but anyway, she was committed as a sympathizer, and that was quite something, because she was a darling. I adored my grandmother.
Was attractive? She had your mother's qualities, didn't she?
She was very quietly intelligent and interested to her dying day, and she lived, poor darling, to be over 90.
She was blind, wasn't she?
And in the end of her life, she was blind. She, to indicate how intelligent she was, she could do, if you read her the clues, she could do the Times crossword without being able to read or see it. She could do it in her head. And, I mean, that's really...
Yes, it's quite something.
Quite something. And she was very unhappy at the end of her life because she'd outlived everybody who was, you know, of any value to her. Particularly my mother, and I think they had a very close relationship.
Did they? Yes, that's interesting. And the fact that she could interest your grandmother in women's suffrage shows she must have had... Basically.
Against her, you against know, her I mean, this yeah. bully of a man. He was, I mean, he was not only a middle-class sort of upstart of a builder, but he was a really pretty frightening man. I was terrified of him as a child going to that house, absolutely petrified of him. And he had terrific tempers, and I think it was jolly brave of my grandmother to even secretly go and help in the suffragette cause.
Yeah. Did your mother resent her father at all? I mean, did she get on with him all right?
I don't think anyone in the family got on with him. Mm. She had two brothers. Philip, I think, was older, and Walter was younger. She was in the middle. So, I mean, it wasn't a sort of only child-father relationship which might have set her on the feminist path, if that's what you were thinking. I don't think it was that. I think the children were very united against this very domineering man.
Yes, yes. So she got on well, her brothers understood her and so on. Did they actually sympathise with
I shouldn't think so. Philip was in the Horse Guards.
Yes, I think he was.
How could that have happened?
So far we haven't touched on Dorothy as a pacifist.
No, we haven't. We must get on to that. I've been just tempted by all
so
things.
I quite agree.
Let me keep feeding you because you're producing marvellous information.
Well, what about you taking one while you're...
Shall I do that?
Thank you very
much.
Sybil,
no,
you need the olives.
What I don't quite understand is why physical PE? I mean...
I don't understand that either. She was quite brilliant enough to, even in those days, have gone to university. I can only think that her father wasn't that supportive of her and would say, well, why don't you be a teacher or something, and maybe there were grants, I don't know, which would have helped her. Neither of the boys went to university. I don't think they were very clever. And I suppose it just wasn't in that...
No.
They weren't middle class in the sense that we would say we were Hampstead middle class, if you know what I mean. And they were South Norwood. I don't suppose it sort of occurred to her to go to university.
I was really wondering, I mean, this carried on throughout her life, even into old age. This sort of concern with physical fitness. There is a sort of link up, isn't there, between the women's movement, the emancipation movement, and sort of physical exercise and all that, isn't there, for obvious reasons?
I don't know. I wouldn't have called her, apart from being a passionate gardener, I wouldn't have called her being, I don't think she ever did exercises but she was a very active, physical person, if that conveys something to you. Very.
She walked quickly and...
Yes, and loved swimming, and was always very fit, and very aware of her body and concerned that it should work.
What about diet?
Ah, well, I was brought up as a vegetarian and my father was a vegetarian. But, no, my mother was never a vegetarian, so that isn't quite in keeping.
But what did she have any attitudes to doctors? I mean,
yes.
How did she react to doctors?
Did she not believe in them?
She didn't believe in, she loathed surgery. And it was a great blow to her that I had to have my tonsils out. And she always said, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, that because I had my tonsils out, they infected an ear and I had mastoid very badly and did really damn nearly die of it. You know, it was always linked to the... surgery, it was close together, so it could conceivably have been true. And she loathed the idea of one's body not functioning properly by itself, and of course had to have surgery herself in the end. And that, I think, so revolted her that she decided she wasn't going to live.
I've always thought so.
So am I.
Always thought so. Yeah. Because nobody understood why she didn't rally.
Yes.
But this perhaps may have been my fault. I know that Edith Summerskill thought I had done very wrong to tell her. And the doctors had all said she wasn't to be told.
Oh, nonsense, she knew. Do you mean about cancer? Oh,
she
don't be dark.
To be told. Those doctors who operated on her in that hospital said to me she's not to be told.
But she knew. Because I went to our GP afterwards in a fury, you know, sort of stupid thing, and said, why on earth didn't you do something to tell my mother or tell me that she had cancer? And he said, I did tell her. She came and told me she got cancer, actually. I mean, no, that doesn't arise.
Well, my view was that I couldn't possibly... We'd gone away on holiday together, that's why I was there. Insult either her intelligence or her courage. That's all. But
I don't think you need have any.
When
illusion,
I told Edith
Summerskill,
she said that it was a shocking thing to have done. And that probably she didn't want to live in consequence.
But anyway,
well, I think she did
an intelligent person would know.
Yeah. Oh, she did know.
Anyway, whether you told them or not.
Especially someone with a, you know, such a background of of training.
Well, precisely, yes. But why was she was a Labour supporter, was she? I mean, she voted Labour, did she?
Good heavens, yes. She was a socialist and of the purest water.
Was she? Why, do you think? I mean, it's a rather fatuous question.
I think because this is, I mean... personalities are made of attitudes, and her feminist attitude was a socialist attitude and a pacifist attitude. I mean, it's this respect for human beings. It's the whole thing is basic, and as I share it myself, I think I understand it. I think her being involved in the feminist movement at that time, it presented itself as the crusading movement of her particular generation, but it could equally have been a peace movement or a revolutionary socialist movement. I mean, she was a rebel in thinking and a great believer in the dignity of human beings and their right to a decent life. And this is
what about children?
Consistent, I mean, running through her life.
Did that lead to a sort of a great sympathy with children, understanding of children? Was she very good with young people?
I wouldn't say children.
Not children, no, but I think she was good with young
people.
She was
very good with young people.
I don't really know much about her with children.
Oh, I do remember my first boyfriend, a boyfriend, your reflection. coming, you know, staying weekends with us where we lived in Kent. And wandering about the entire weekend talking to my mother, and I got really very angry and jealous. So, well, she really was a very captivating person.
Did she have ideas about your career or your future at all?
Yes. I think she would have liked me to be a doctor. Not that she had any respect for doctors. I don't quite know why, how that works.
I didn't know she wanted you to be a doctor. That I didn't know.
Mm. And my father always wanted me to be a psychiatric social worker. And I split the difference and became an economist. I would have, actually, if the war hadn't intervened, I think I would have done criminology, but... I mean, that was the sort of path I was going on, but...
But I would imagine she wasn't pushing, she wouldn't push this on
no.
you. She'd simply be very interested in your career, would she? And in your future, as a woman, as well as her daughter.
Yes, and I can remember her being quite tart with me. If I didn't have good reports or come top of the form, or I don't think it was the top of the form business, really. It was that any suggestion that I wasn't working very hard or doing as well as I ought to was frowned upon. So she was quite determined that I would... And actually, I was fortunate in that I found exams very easy and really quite enjoyed them, whereas my own poor darling daughter has exam phobia and I, you know, just have to accept that some people are like that, and I wasn't. I was lucky.
Did she sort of encourage you in reading and make sure you had room of your own, that sort of thing? Did she really help you at home to get on well at school?
Oh yes, but I think that was all taken for granted. I mean, I was an only child mixing with extremely intellectual adults. I didn't have a chance. I mean, I was part of a circle of women and men who talked about interesting things all the time, and I was there taking part.
So you just absorbed it in a way.
And of course I read, and of course I...
Yes. Did she read, actually?
Read?
Oh, yes. Yes, I would say she did. She was pretty knowledgeable. I don't say she was highly literary. She certainly read.
You had books in that house?
These things,
oh, we had
books
masses of books. In fact, I hung on to masses of books of hers.
Mm.
And she knew a lot of people who wrote. I mean, quite a lot of these books have got autographs in or were, I know, given to her by people.
Mm.
Of course, my father knew Wells very well. And so between them, they amassed a collection of books.
Mm.
Mm. Did she sort of have ideas about education? I mean, I don't know which school you went to, for instance.
I think she had rather what I would call mixed up ideas about education, though perhaps that's very unfair and I can't think of it. She sent me initially, at the age of 3, because I could by then read, to the infant school where there was an extremely enlightened teacher. And I, we had at that time a housekeeper with a daughter who was a few years older than me, and when she came home from school she taught me what she'd learnt that day, and that's how I came to learn to read. I was taught by the child a couple of years older than me. And I stayed at that infant school, and in fact I was, as it were, an assistant teacher. I can remember sitting in the teacher's chair, which had 2 steps up to it and a great high back, and telling stories that I made up there and then to the tinies, the new, while the other teacher in the room went off and did something else. It was a dame school. Incredible, but she was a very enlightened woman. And I went from there to a terribly fancy mixed co-educational prep school run by some non-religious, you know, sort of agnostic people. It was called Halstead Place, and it was in a very beautiful Elizabethan manor house at Halstead, Kent, and was really very expensive. I don't know how we managed to get in there. I mean, I was sent as a day pupil. Most of the people were boarders. And I remember my dancing partner was Peter Gill, who was the son of Eric Gill, who is now producing things. And it was that sort of a rather far-out modern co-ed prep school. And very small classes and very good teaching. And I went from there to Bromley County School for Girls, whereas other people would be going to sort of public schools, and was far ahead of my years. I leapt a couple of years into a class with children much older than myself, and did in fact do university entrance from there. And I can remember being called into the head's room at the beginning of one year, and or the end of an old year or something, and being told at Lindwall, I would so much have liked to have made you head girl, but you are such a rebel. So I felt I was stamped then.
Did your mum encourage you to be a rebel, do you think? I mean, did you sort of come home and say, oh, this
I think I absorbed this with my mother's milk. I mean, I think I was never prevented from being. In fact, I got religion at one time, and my God, did I have to justify it when I got home with my modern English translation. And I do remember that. Well, did I know you then? No, I don't think I did.
I don't think so, Lindwall, no. Yeah.
No, I think this was a Monica Whateley period.
Yes. Well, she was Catholic, wasn't she?
Yes. But I didn't get religion from her. I got religion having gone off on some holiday run by...
Well, you didn't get religion from Dorothy.
Oh, no, yes, that's what I mean. I had justify my newfound faith the moment I got home. I still got the Bible. But I lost the faith in about a week, I think.
The Bible is a very useful book.
Yeah.
She was quite militant, was she then? Militantly...
No, I don't think she was anything militantly in that sense. I mean, she wouldn't, she just liked people to be sure where they stood. And yes, I mean, she would simply gently question me as to, I mean, I'd be making absurd statements, you know, about.
Yeah, I don't think you would call her agnostic. I think she was atheist.
I think perhaps she was, really, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure my father was atheist, there's no doubt there. And my mother, I would say, was agnostic because she was respecting of other people's views. I mean, she always said, I don't care what other people think, but I have my doubts. I can hear her saying that.
Yes, well, perhaps you would then. If she said, I have my doubts, then she's agnostic.
But my father was quite peremptory about it. I mean, he just knew there was no God, and no stupid little daughter of his was going to say there was, you see. I mean, that was a different attitude from my mother's, I think.
Yes, I think perhaps
This is really marvellous. You're picturing a most marvellous picture.
Well, I've forgotten all this. I mean, you're making me remember. It's lovely.
What about housework and things like that? Was she any good in the house, your mother?
She hated housework, and that's why she always had a housekeeper. I mean, she was much better in the garden, and I do absolutely sympathise. I resent every minute I spend doing housework. She was quite a good cook when she set her mind to it. But she really couldn't be bothered very much, and the people who came for the weekend had to do a lot of it themselves.
Yeah. But she was a very special gardener.
Was she?
Oh, very special.
She really liked the flowers.
She really had green fingers.
Oh, wow, but she was a serious gardener. No, she grew a terrific lot of vegetables. It wasn't just, but she did like flowers too.
Well, she really made a garden, though, didn't she, out of nothing?
That was one of the things I was crossing my fingers about, because this house, which wasn't really a house, it was put there on this marvellous sloping site with the old orchard, the bottom, and it was one of those huts which during the First World War had been a soldier's hut. You know, it was asbestos lined, cavity wall, with that nice horizontal wood, overlapping wood outside it, a single story thing. And that was our house, and eventually they built on a bit. But it was basically this long army hut. And she had made a flat lawn partly out of the foundations that the builders had removed when they put this hut down on the slope, you know, they'd leveled it, but also from excavating and moving, all this time being pregnant with me, which was remarkable. She didn't have another miscarriage. And in fact, it was a most beautifully designed garden with a lovely view across the valley to Beechwoods, which were National Trust Beechwoods. And it was a lovely house.
Yeah.
She owned it? How did she come to live there in the first place?
Well, I suppose my father bought it for her, or they bought it.
Yes.
I mean, he was very much around. There was a very permanent relationship there, although he had a wife and millions of other children, some of which have made their name.
How did your mother get on with the wife?
Not at all. The wife was supposed not to know. I know, because I knew some of the other children, that they always knew that I existed, because their father would go on holiday and come back with toys that were way beneath them, you know, in age range. And so they always knew there must be some other child. But the wife was always supposed not to know. And in fact, this was rather excruciating for me when he was dying, because this stupid mystique was kept up to the bitter end, and I had to be, you know, kept out of the hospital and, you know, not clash. It was really terrible, and I wasn't invited to the funeral. And I mean, it was sort of archaic.
Yeah.
And I still feel quite bitter about it, actually.
Yes, how awful. What about neighbours, actually? Did she have any sort of nearby in Dartford?
Well, Dartford doesn't arise in South Norwood, do you mean, or in...
Well, I'm really thinking, yes, I mean, this was entirely in the country then, this house she had.
Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't Dartford. Dartford was the name of the training college.
Oh, sorry. Where was it, actually, then, in Kent?
This house was at, near Farnborough, Kent. Green Street Green is the name of the village. Do you know where it is?
Well, I know, it's Vegas. Near Chelsfield.
That's right.
Yes, Chelsfield. I've got a great aunt who lives in
Chelsfield was our railway station. Yes. We used to walk across fields to the station.
I see. Yes, I mixed that up. Mm. Did she?
No, it wasn't Dartford. Dartford doesn't arise really.
What did she live near people? Did she get on with her neighbours? That's really what I was wondering. I mean, did she?
In some ways, immediate neighbours, yes. We had a chicken farm immediately next door, and they were quite friendly. In fact, very friendly, and so was I with them. And the other side, we had a very interesting household where the son was an artist, and the daughter across the road, they were near neighbours, they married, and this daughter used to go around in my childhood in long skirts like they're wearing now, the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, they were arty beyond belief in a miserable little suburban village like Green Street Green. And of course, the mother who lived in the house next door was very friendly, and you know, looked after our dog, and but not friendly in the sense that they would come in the evening to parties. My great friend, as a child, lived was a boy who lived across the road, and I think I was the constant factor because, of course, both my parents were away all the time.
Me
and the housekeeper.
I really was simply sort of asking a rather sort of simple-minded question. I mean, I just wondered, your mother was presumably rather odd, wasn't she, then, though she wouldn't be now, in the sense of not having a husband around regularly and that sort of thing. I wondered whether she made up a story about it or whether, in fact, she was honest.
No, she wouldn't make up a story about it.
No.
I never made up any stories about it at school or anything. I mean, I had a father who took me away on holiday and came some weekends, that's all.
And
I
never, the neighbours knew that.
Never made any pretense about it. Mm. And the neighbours knew, of course, and nobody minded. Well, as I say, we were a rather peculiar bunch.
Yes.
By chance.
One thing, don't ask this if you don't want to, but I mean, it would seem to me, in a way, what might have happened now would be for your father to have married your mother and got divorced. Did that never really occur to them?
I don't think they either of them wanted that. I think my father felt terribly responsible towards his wife. And they lived in Welwyn, very nice house, you know, very prosperous. The children, my half-brothers and sisters, were all quite remarkable people. And I think he would have felt it would have been a terrible betrayal to divorce that perfectly respectable and good woman. For no good reason. I mean, my mother was quite capable of looking after herself, so
she never ever felt he ought to.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
On the contrary,
on
I
would
have loathed
it. On the contrary, I think Dorothy had very determined ideas about it.
Oh, yes. I think I said earlier
yes.
that I think they had a
yes.
marvellous lover relationship, which wouldn't have stood up to the stresses of living together.
But presumably she also felt a certain feeling of duty to the wife, did she, as a feminist?
I don't think she gave any... I mean, I've no idea. I never discussed the wife with her. But thinking of myself in that role, I wouldn't have given two patents of thought about the wife. I mean, I don't think she felt she was taking anything away from the wife that the wife had or was entitled to, on the contrary.
Yes, you see, I was only really thinking of the position of a... I mean, obviously feminists, weren't they, between the wars, were very concerned about how... about divorce regulations, family regulations, the position of the woman in the family and that sort of thing.
My mother was extremely instrumental in changing the law on nationality and, in fact, almost single-handed got... women married to aliens won through so that they were entitled to retain their British nationality. I think she was really the only voice to begin with speaking for those women who found suddenly they were enemy aliens, never having been out of the country. And I mean, that was a something women for Westminster actually did, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, they did.
Yeah.
As well as equal compensation for war injury. That was another thing. Oh, I ought to show you that photograph.
But going back to, because I had, naturally, I think Lyndall wouldn't have discussed with her mother about the question of divorce. Such a word never came into anything that Dorothy ever said to me about her relationship with the Emma Davis. Never.
She was
quite confident that as a woman who wanted to have children, she had a right to, and that loving somebody didn't give you any rights in them. She felt very strongly about that. She really had a very remarkable character in that respect.
That's very interesting, yes.
She would never, she'd never mentioned his wife. He was Lyndall's father, and they were agreed that this should be their relationship.
Because all this we've been talking about, I suppose, is before you knew her, is it? I mean,
yes.
Did you know her in the WSPU, actually?
No, I didn't know her. I was a very humble member. and I didn't know her then. I met her for the first time in 1938, just before the Second World War.
Did you? Yeah.
And I used to do open air speaking on Tower Hill.
Did you really?
Every week. And I didn't know this. She used to come from her city office to hear me. And then eventually spoke to me. And that's how we came to know each other.
What were you speaking about, actually?
Oh, pacifism.
Were you really? I see.
Yes,
well, this
I'm
is
pacifist.
Part of her life.
Yeah, this is part of her life that you'll have to hear about.
Yes. How did you first, can you describe her first meeting you? I mean, do you remember?
Do I remember her?
Yes.
Oh yes, vividly. Partly because she was a very distinguished looking person and...
That has come to the end of the table for some